No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The bastards are back for this midweek edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a two-game set against the New York Mets, winning both games. They are currently second place in the American League East, 6 games behind the division-leading Tampa Bay Rays. They are still in the number one wildcard seed, 2 games ahead of the Yankees. Toronto Blue Jays are half a game back from the Yankees. Still a tight 3-team race at the moment with the Oakland A's and Seattle Mariners in striking distance. Quick disclaimer, as always, for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman, coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Co-hosting with me tonight from the mile high city of Denver by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan.
Yellow jerseys every night?
Oh, God. Yeah.
I don't think we'd take them off.
Oh, man. Well, Nick Pivetta's pitching on Saturday, so I think that's when the streak will come to an end. But man,
hopefully not.
I hope we never see those jerseys again.
Well, they gotta wear the marathon's in October this year, right?
It is, I believe. Yes.
That'd be great to. I wonder if they'd wear it if they're in a playoff game.
If they do, then if they do and they win, then I'm on the yellow jersey train.
Yellow forever, baby.
Those are the ugliest jerseys of all time. Like, why Chris Sale hasn't taken a bunch of scissors to all of them?
Because they're winning.
I'm not gonna lie. I wore one to every All-Star event and got nothing but compliments. No one knew what the hell they were, They're like, "What? Why is your jersey yellow?" I was like, "Oh, well, let me explain it to you." So yeah, but they all got a good amount of compliments, which I was surprised by.
I actually like the hat. I love the hats.
Yeah, the hats.
I hate the jersey. Like, can we invert the colors? Can we wear baby blue with some yellow writing?
That would be sweet.
I would be okay with that.
I would be on board.
I would own a bunch of those.
I would be on board with that. The hat is nice. I do like that with the mostly blue. You know, like basically the hat is inverted. So, yeah, that's good. So, Job joining us from the nation's capital. And how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a little nervous here. I realized about a half hour ago when I sent you a note, Terry, that if all goes well, this will be my last regular season show. Because next week I'll be at the game in Baltimore, hopefully to close out a series sweep. And that would mean it'll be the last midweek show before the playoffs, if we're in the playoffs. So I'm excited. I'm nervous. I'm hoping that we have more baseball to talk about, you know, the next time that Andrew, you and I get together and it's not just off-season work.
Well, it's always a mishmash in the off-season once we get to it. I just take whoever's available to record the show. If we're lucky, and just kind of a spoiler alert, in Deep Dives, which will be released 24 hours after this one, we're going to be talking about who our preferences are between the Yankees, Toronto, what we like about each team, what we don't like. But if we get beyond them and we're into the LDS, which would be against Tampa, inevitably, we'll probably have a show almost every night with some combination. It could be any combination of us. So We're pretty playoff heavy with the coverage, and we haven't done it, obviously, since 2018, which was several crews ago, it feels like. But yeah, so there could potentially still be a lot of baseball left if we're lucky. So,
well, that's the hope. That's why we play 162, right?
Yeah, and hopefully, how many do you have to play? Let's see.
Magic number is two.
It'll be more. 1, 5, and then 7 and 7. So that's up to 20 more games beyond the, you know, 162.
See, I was thinking, how many more do we have to play before we can guarantee ourselves a playoff spot? And I think the answer is, hopefully, we'll know by the time the weekend crew, Jason and Charlie, get on here on Sunday evening. With you, Terry, we will be in the playoffs. That's my hope.
The magic number right now is 7 as we speak.
Well, you could. If you sweep
the magic number is 7, but if you sweep the Yankees,
you need one more.
The magic number drops fast. You need one more.
You need one more, yeah. Yeah, so and then you got Baltimore next. So and we've swept them the last two times we played them. Maybe even 3 times ago. I don't remember, but so getting it out of the way, attention listeners from across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Boston, do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their 4th generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. The Lawnmower 4.0 also has a 4000K LED spotlight you can turn on and off when needed for a more precise shave throughout your travels across the universe. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. for a clean Trinity and beyond. Your Spaceballs will thank you. Getting back into it, it was a sweep. This was a big series because we could have went 0 for 2 coming into it. I wouldn't have been shocked.
I mean, it's a big series against an opponent who, frankly, is sliding, but they are a quality opponent. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The Mets, when they're on their game, can be dominant. They've just fallen off. Frankly, that organization is a dumpster fire. from the front office to the players. Being a Mets fan has got to be really tough right now because you went from ownership that you hated so much that you forced them basically to sell the team to an owner that you worshipped within 2 weeks for being willing to spend money. And then the players putting their thumbs down at you and the owner tweeting mean things about the players and the fans and two GMs this season alone. It's really just a dumpster fire of an organization.
Yeah, and with Walker leading off – or not Walker, Stroman leading off this series, he's been really good this year. So he had potential to shut down the Red Sox lineup, and it almost looked like he was about to when Xander grounded into that double play early on in the game. You're like, oh, this could be one of those nights. But luckily they rebounded, and once you won that first one, it was – you kind of knew.
Yeah, we had the bases loaded there, no outs, and then we don't score. And then Erod comes up, bases loaded – no outs, two of their score. So that it looked like it could have went upside down. Today's matchup with Sale and Walker was obviously favorable. But they have the offense that, you know, if they show up and we don't, then I wouldn't have been surprised if we dropped a couple. But what are we, 7 wins in a row now going back to Seattle? So love to keep that intact through the Yankee series, but we'll get into that in the tail end of the show. So
Terry, I'm going to be honest here.
Yep.
I did not watch game one until after it finished. And the reason being is because I was nervous that Stroman was going to shut us down. And living in the D.C. area, I have blackout restrictions on all the Orioles games. So I didn't watch that series at all. I was just like, oh, no, it's not worth going upstairs and finding it on cable and all this. So I didn't watch that series at all until the games were over. And so tonight I was like, oh, if I watch and they lose, then I can't watch any baseball for the rest of the year. So I'm feeling really, really relieved right now that they went out and scored 12 runs.
Well, yeah, they did. That was 12-5 tonight with Sale, and then Tuesday was 6-3. Eduardo Rodriguez got the start. It was a brief one. Cora had a really short leash on him, but we'll get into some of that as we go. But let's get into it's just going to be studs tonight. I don't think there's really any duds worth mentioning. So, Andrew, go ahead, lead off. Who was your stud for the series?
It's pretty easy. It was the yellow jerseys. No, it was the guy that went that went 4-for-6 in him, Kyle Schwarber. Two absolute monster bombs. How he pulled that second one, even though it was like high and 2 inches off the plate, it was absurd. The power display he put on tonight was just, I mean, I think we were all kind of waiting to see that. That's what he did during that stretch when I think it was in June, when every night he was, you know, just leading off the game with that. Yeah. They were all like 475-foot home runs. And the first one only went 434 today, but it seemed like it went a whole lot further than that. If this is a sign of things to come, the one-game playoff gets very interesting to see the positioning of guys like we talked about at last week's deep dive show, who starts Bobby or Kyle if one of them has to play first. And both those guys are red hot.
Bench for Dougal. Yeah.
He's red hot too. Yeah, yeah, this is kind of a problem to have. I know, right? We went from not having any first baseman to, oh my god, which like MVP second half guy do we bench? So yeah, Schwarber gets my stud. What is even close for me? The power display he put on was second to none that I've seen all season.
Well, he's 5-for-10 now against Walker with 5 home runs. And he has 3 multi-home run games against the Mets this year alone. That's batting practice for Kyle Schwarber. Like, Andrew, you were at the home run derby, right? It's slightly over 50% of the pitches thrown that are home runs. It's more like 70. But this is pretty close. Like, 5-for-10 with 5 home runs. That's like home run derby.
I'm so mad he was hurt during the All-Star break. That would have been so fun to watch.
He's been an absolute stud. He was off the bag today when Sale threw the ball to first. They did not overturn the call down 11-2. I think they were like, let's move this game along. So his defense at first still does need a little bit of work. But you can't complain when he's going to hit 2 home runs and 2 at-bats for 4 RBIs. I don't know why they pitched to him for the second at-bat, frankly, knowing the numbers. I mean, at that point, he's 4-for-9 with 4 home runs, and he has one off you already tonight to straightaway center. Why are you pitching to him? I don't know. He's getting to the point where when you know he's on, you can't take him out of the lineup. He's one of the streakiest hitters in baseball, granted, but when he's hot, he's one of the best.
Well, I mean, he's not all that streaky in terms of getting on base, though. He was 4-for-6 in the series, but he drew 3 walks.
You're right, mostly power. His zone recognition has been fantastic. He takes a lot of walks. In fact, his plate discipline has trickled throughout the rest of the lineup since he came to the Sox, Bobby Dalbec being the most notable. I know that was a focus that the Red Sox asked Dalbec to look at the second half, but it feels like since Schwarber came on board, every single hitter in the lineup is taking more walks.
And Verdugo, his uptick coincides with the Schwarber acquisition as well. Vasquez has come on in the last couple of weeks, stringing together some hits. So I like Kyle Schwarber, and we've done a lot of talking about middle infielders in the last week and how there's a number of them that could make a big impact for this team, probably most notably Carlos Correa. But if we bring back Schwarber for 4 more years, maybe a 5th, I don't know if he'll command that type of a deal in the offseason, but let's just say 4. Are you more or less likely to win it by having Correa instead of Schwarber? Because I think Schwarber could help you just as much. I don't think the difference...
Where's Schwarber playing?
Well, I mean, you could do whatever you want with him, especially if JD opts out. So you've got 3 different positions.
So you have 3 different positions, and that's been an issue to get everybody in the lineup here of late. So my suggestion would be sign him. Stick him in left field. If JD opts out, he's a great DH. He is, because of his plate discipline, one of the more matchup immune guys that you have as far as getting on base. He very rarely gives you an 0-for-5 unless he's got at least 2 walks. Like you just don't see 5 at bats where he's not on base at least once or twice. Whereas you get that with other hitters who swing for the fences. So to me, I would sign him in a heartbeat. I think he adds a lot of value to this team. He makes your lineup deeper no matter what. And, you know, I still think the Correa for Xander move would be lateral, not forward.
Andrew, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, if the Red Sox go on a deep postseason run and Schwarber is the main cause, I don't know if they're going to be able to afford him, quite frankly, with some of the bills that are coming due with extensions. I would love to see him if it was either – I would take him over JD. I don't know. For some reason, I got a change of heart with which way I thought JD was going to lean. I think he could come back. I don't know why. It's just been – you know, giving me that feeling, it, just walking away from that guaranteed money. I don't know if it's a certainty. Given the option between the two, maybe it's recency bias, but I would absolutely go Schwarber if I can only pick one.
Well, I think his contract would essentially replace JD's contract or thereabouts. I don't think he's getting, you know, $200 million, let's say. I think that would be an overpay.
I think he'd probably get like four at 80 to 100, probably. Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet.
That's about what I'm figuring. So that's about what that would do, is it would just take the place of JD's current money. But here's something to consider. Here's why I think JD will opt out. He would be leaving 19 on the table. And let's just say there's not a lot of interest, or his market ends up being lower than what many of us anticipate. He's going to do no worse than a Nelson Cruz contract for 1 year, 10 to 12. So he'd probably lose 7 to 9 million, but I think he takes that gamble to get a bigger contract.
I think it depends on whether or not he wants to be in Boston. You know, he's one of those guys who has only played for a handful of teams that actually wanted him. I mean, he bounced around a little bit, and then when he found his landing spot in Detroit, I mean, that was it. You know, he might not want to move to another team, bounce around again. And if he does want to do that, take that risk, I think it's probably a good idea to do it this season with the CBA coming up. I just do. I think with the CBA, everybody's going to get paid.
And if he gets hurt next year, then what's his value the following year? I think it's too risky for him to not go for it.
Well, he's 35. I mean, depends on how long he wants to play. For all we know, he wants to play out this contract and walk away and go do something else. Not a lot of guys want to be Nelson Cruz. Not a lot of guys can be Nelson Cruz and play until they're 42.
Well, JD did say in the, I think it was in spring training, that he wanted to play beyond the age of 40. And be a hero in Boston or something. So it was the first day of spring training, I think. But I think it's, like I said, too risky for him to not pursue another 3 to 4 year deal this coming winter.
I wonder how much money the Marlins would have to throw at him for him to go there. I mean, he's from Miami. I don't know. It could be a nice, like, finish your career off, you know, hang out at the beach all day long, go show up an hour before the game, DH. Not bad for a 35-year-old. If they get the three-year deal.
If they give him a three-year deal, I think he might take that. But I think at this point in his career, knowing who he is, he probably goes to a team like Toronto, who is one player short, just doesn't get over the hump. And I don't know that it would be Toronto, because Canadian taxes make it not worth paying him. But say, for example, if Oakland or Seattle comes calling, Seattle specifically, how do you not give that consideration? If you're going to get paid big dollars to go be the mentor in Seattle to all these young kids who are about to make a playoff run for the first time in 20 years.
Seattle's going to be a player this winter, so
that's exactly what I'm thinking. They're in the market for a bat, and they're in the market for a leader, and they're going to be in the market for some pitching too. Like, they're going to be all over the free agency market, and I think for a guy like JD Martinez, come DH for us, teach our young kids how to hit, and be the face of our organization for the next 3 years, and then walk away and retire. They'll overpay for him. I absolutely think so.
I think the Giants could be a fit. He's got a little bit of unfinished business in Houston. They DFA'd him. I don't know if that's a fit if they keep Brantley and you got.
I don't think he would go back there. I mean, they wrote him off, and he went on to be a great power hitter for the next 10 years. I wouldn't go back there, would you?
Yeah, and Jordan Alvarez is never going to give up that job. He's just a monster.
That's what I was saying. So, I mean, you've got one semi-limited outfielder in Brantley and then Jordan at DH. So perhaps that's not a great fit. But
a semi-good fit would be Philly. Like, that's a great fit. Go play with Bryce Harper. They're on the verge of potentially making the playoffs this year, let alone next year. And we know they love to spend money. Dave Dombrowski is there. He brought him on in Texas and in Detroit. He brought him on in Boston. Like, that, to me, just makes sense if the DH gets implemented universally in the CBA.
There's definitely a connection. Wouldn't that be weird, though? A GM worked for three different organizations and signed the same player in all of them. So,
oh, we traded for Christian Arroyo three different times with Hein Bloom, right? Three different teams have traded for Christian Arroyo?
Something like that.
Hein Bloom at the GM? Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. The GMs have their guys.
Something like that. So let's kind of maybe connect something there. Job, go ahead with your stud for the series.
My stud for the series is going to be Jose Iglesias. Not the flashiest of picks, I know, based on the fact that we scored 12 runs and he didn't have a home run, didn't have that many RBIs. But he has stabilized the middle infield in a way that we didn't think we would have when we lost Christian Arroyo for half the season, basically. We've lost Christian Arroyo for 10 games here, 10 games there. It's now 83 games that he's missed this season. Jose Iglesias has become that steadying presence. He was great in this series. He's been great since he signed with the Red Sox. Terry, you tweeted out on the Bastards of Boston account 10 seconds before I tweeted it out. I'd already written the tweet, hit send, and I looked up. It's like 1 minute ago. Bastards of Boston said, would it be great if he signed 6 days earlier? And I'm like, wow, I'm going to be really depressed that he can't play in the playoffs. Because he is showing you great defense, great compete, great hustle at a position that he's never played before. He's never played second before. And he's allowing Kike to play center field, so we don't have any wonky defensive linemen with Verdugo in center and errors everywhere. And then on top of that, he's hitting .318 since coming to the Sox. He had another good day today. He had a triple, which was, frankly, a little bit of a gift. Pilar of any other year catches that. But great hustle to go to third. Forced his tough throw, went home. He also had a walk before being pulled from the game. I just don't see how this guy got DFA'd from the Angels. I mean, it's not like he was making a lot of money. I just don't get it. He's a career 300 hitter, and it's good to have him back. I would sign him in the offseason to a utility man role.
I actually think you're seeing why he was DFA'd by the Angels, because he clearly didn't care. Yeah, he was a negative defensive war player, is a negative all-around war player this entire year before coming to Boston, and now he's putting a positive war all across the board. So he definitely wasn't probably the best teammate out there due to lack of interest, which is kind of shocking because, like, you played for the Reds and the Tigers and then the Orioles. So you should be used to this, the losing, but
I mean, he signed a free agent deal with them, too, right? It's not like he was traded there.
No, totally. They might have been the only ones that offered him money. But, yeah, I think the Angels also waited strategically till September 3rd and not do him a favor. Because sometimes you'll see teams do players a favor and, you know, let them go before the postseason rosters lock. And they clearly didn't do that in this case, unfortunately. And trading for him would have resulted in them going over the luxury tax. We're only paying him $87,000 this year instead on the major league minimum. So, yeah, it's a shame that they don't have him in October. And I was actually kind of thinking about this earlier, and I meant to make a note of it, so I'm glad we're talking about it now. He might just have to jump out of his lineup, like, soon, though. They might have to force him out of the lineup to get Christian Arroyo back up to speed, unfortunately.
Well, they did that today already. I mean, they
beat
Arroyo in this game.
But in more serious situations, you know, gotta get Arroyo four at bats in a game and get him back up to where he's going to be, which it sucks. I mean, you're definitely taking away from your team, but maybe they'll wait till after this Yankee series to do that or something like that if they manage to take 2-3.
I would say that's the ideal scenario for both the team and for Arroyo, because the Yankees do have some tough pitching. I mean, it's not been the pitching that's been letting them down this year for the most part. And if you can give Arroyo 6 days against the Orioles and the Nationals, he'll be ready for the wild card. He'll be ready.
That's probably what I would do. I wouldn't really mess with anything going into the Yankee series. That those are three big games, and you want to sustain your momentum and not end it on a bad note and then go sideways into the Baltimore series. And I was thinking one thing, though. What if you just dyed Iglesias' hair a lighter brown, put a fake beard on him? You could put the number 39 jersey on him and send him out there.
Just yeah, say, like it's like Markieff Morris and his brother Marcus, right? They played for each other in a playoff game, according to some TMZ gossip. Granted, they're twins. But I would love to have Jose Iglesias on this playoff roster. I think he's solidified you up the middle. He's made everything calm. And gone are the days of the five Bastards of Boston hosts talking about how the bottom third of the order is costing us games, and this is why we're going nowhere, and this is why Chaim Bloom doesn't deserve to have a job, except Andrew. This is a whole new lineup. He stabilized
the right side of history.
I mean, you know, at this point, I can't disagree with that, but it really is – it's shocking to me that a 300 hitter in Jose Iglesias is so underappreciated across the league just because he doesn't hit for power.
Well, Andrew,
I would
– sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Andrew made some points with perhaps there might have been some issues. I mean, he has had some confrontations with teammates. And he's got a manager in Anaheim that has probably one of the strongest personalities of any manager in Joe Madden.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and maybe you do just get sick of losing after a while. So,
I mean, if you're a competitive guy, right? And frankly, when you sign a deal with the Los Angeles Angels in the offseason and you have Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon and Shohei Ohtani and you know, you have some star talent on that team, and you go on to lose close to 100 games. I mean, that's tough. Well, I can imagine that by the time June rolls around, you're done. You don't want to play there anymore.
And he has to play behind what's one of the worst pitching staffs in baseball, really.
Yeah, and if he wants to make a great diving stop and a great throw to first, there's no guarantee they're going to catch it. Right? It's like, it's a thankless job to play well on a losing team in a lot of markets, and I think the Angels is one of those. So it doesn't surprise me. I hate to do this to Christian Arroyo because many a time he's been so clutch and so good for these Red Sox. Jose Iglesias is just a better Christian Arroyo.
We talked about it earlier privately in the war room, and I was a big Christian Arroyo guy coming into the season, and I still like him, but...
And so do I. I mean, no one dislikes Christian Arroyo. He's very clutch, and he's great defensively, has made an error all season. I'm knocking on wood. But Jose Iglesias just does everything that Arroyo does a little bit better.
But for me, though, the point I was about to make is it's the durability. How many games are you getting him for? He's played 50. Well, tonight would be 54 games, and that's the most he's ever played. As frustrating as only 54 games this season has been, that's the most. And I don't have Iglesias's, you know, career history in front of me, but
I do. Would you like it?
How many games has he played?
Okay. His only seasons with few games played, 2020, he played 39 games in a 60-game season. 2013, played 100 games. Those are his lowest marks. His highest marks are 130, 137, 146, 127, 114. He's constantly playing 110 games and up every season.
Right, so there's a pretty solid record of durability there, and it would only be a one-year deal. So it would be
a one-year deal, and it would not be expensive. Like, you could pay him, I would suggest, probably around $2 million, $3 million. I don't think he's going to be much more than that, if he has any other offers at all.
I had him in the 3 to 5 range, but it could very well be on the lower end of that. So, Andrew, you had some differing thoughts. So
well, I wasn't going to five for a utility guy. It just to me, it didn't make sense just for a guy to play 80 to 100 games a year. I just don't see it. I don't know how much money they're going to have to play with this offseason. It's all going to depend on the CBA and whatever rules that they come up with. I'm sure they're going to be stupid just based off of Manfred's history. I would rather just give ARB 1 to Arroyo and hope that super part-time keeps them healthy, because they've all been weird injuries, like going back to when he started and we got hit on the wrist as a rookie, broke his wrist, and just stupid stuff like that. I don't know. It would take a lot for me to want to spend that kind of cash, quite frankly. And if Arroyo is going to be approaching that in ARB 1, which I can't imagine he will, I would even have a hard time giving that to him. I'd rather see those finances allocated to pitching in one way or another.
And Jeter Downs has to come up at some point. I mean, he spent the whole year in AAA. Does he though?
He did, but he's only had he's finishing the season strong, but he's only faced he's only had 8 at bats by guys that are younger than him. He's still really young, and it was an aggressive placement in AAA, and he started to turn a corner, which is amazing. I don't know if he's gonna go to the AFL or anything after the season ends, but I wouldn't count on him till at least midseason if he's ready.
I don't even know that he'll play next year. I mean, you look at him and how young he is. I almost feel like the placement of him at AAA was a reactionary move by Chaim Bloom and probably the front office and ownership. I think it's a collaborative move to show Red Sox fans, hey, look, the guy we got for Mookie's pretty good. I don't know necessarily that this was the right step for his development. I think he could have benefited from some time at AA for a lot longer, but it benefited the organization to have a almost ready major leaguer in the minors than it did to have a AA guy who might not see the big leagues for 4 years. As far as
PR he was probably too good for AA though, because he did well at the alt site last year. They did want to challenge him, but sometimes it takes a year and a half, 2 years at AAA for some of these guys to get ready. And like I said, the bombs he was hitting near the end there were all light tower power hits. So the pedigree's there. He's a 50-plus tool across the board kind of guy. No, I'm definitely not giving up on him at this point.
And perhaps the year off from regular minor league play might have impacted him more than your average minor leaguer. I'll say this though, if he's not up by the All-Star break next year, that's a little disappointing. And I hope he's a guy that we can count on with about that time frame.
Yeah, it's all going to depend on spring training and how he gets off to a start. I don't know where they'd put Yeah, he'd be forcing someone out at second. He's pretty much second primarily now. I'm not too sure.
I think the main concern is you have Kike Hernandez for another year, right? On this 2-year deal, you have him next year. If Jeter Downs is ready, which I think every intent for the Red Sox is to have Jeter Downs with the big club for the majority of next year, if not all of next year, then you need to move Kike to second. And then he blocks Jeter Downs. Jeter Downs is only 23 years old. So my assumption is that Downs probably stays in the minors until at least August. And he's probably a September call-up next year and is not playing in the big leagues next season. But not because he's not ready. It's going to be because they chose to promote Duran over Downs. You only have so many spots.
Well, I don't think if Arroyo's still on the team, I mean, I'm totally convinced he's going to do one or two DL stints, injured list stints, prior to the trade deadline, and that could be conservative. And if we don't bring back Iglesias, I mean, who are we worried about taking time from? I'm not worried about taking time from any of those guys. If Downs from is Kike. Ready.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Kike is your everyday second baseman next year if Duran is ready to play center. That's just the nature of the Red Sox contract situation right now is your outfield is locked up and cheap. Your infield is going to be Kike Hernandez, Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, and whoever plays first.
Let me give you another situation here. And this, I don't know if it would be a possibility, but I don't think they'll rule it out. If Jaren Duran, they still believe in the bat, but clearly not the fielder, he wasn't a half bad second baseman.
And, oh God, no! I'm all done with fielding.
Well, I mean, he came up Olympics. He came up as a second baseman, so he could easily make that move back if they thought the bat was still there. I don't know. I guarantee it'll be talked about a little bit inside the walls there. But again, long shot, just as throwing out a scenario.
And he could be Duran could be a fourth outfielder. I mean, he doesn't have his projected annual numbers is a 240 guy with what, 20 bombs maybe. And then you would think that Downs has to be significantly higher than that, at least from a batting average standpoint.
Batting average probably closer to 280 for Downs, 15 to 20 home runs. Duran probably moved that up to 25 to 30 home runs. He's really? Got about 66. Oh yeah, wow. He's got 60 power.
Okay.
Yeah. The speed and the power are really the only thing that Duran has on Downs. Downs is just solid all across the board. He's just one of those guys that doesn't have giant fundamental flaws.
Maybe it'll be like a Didi Gregorius type guy.
That'd be great. Yeah, I'd love it.
I would take that.
I don't think Chaim Bloom is the kind of guy to go make a big trade deadline splash based on our current circumstances. But with the logjam that we see right now, with where do we play these guys, I wouldn't be surprised if Downs comes out or if Dalbec comes out and mashes the beginning of the year, assuming Dalbec's still on the roster in the spring, which I think is a long shot anyway.
Really?
One of those guys is moving. Somebody's moving. And I think there's a possibility that you move on from Jaren Duran. Jaren Duran goes to another ball club in the majors for some pitching. I think you could move Duran for a starting pitcher and you could have your lineup be pretty set for the next, the next run at hopefully a World Series championship.
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking when you were raising the question about, where would Duran play or how would it shake out when Downs came up? There is probably a good chance that one of Downs, Duran, or Dalbec does get traded. And whether they keep...
Oh, absolutely. That's what they're there for, pretty much.
And keeping Kyle Schwarber could be part of Dalbec getting traded. And, I mean, I don't really know what I want with Dalbec at this point. I was all for trading him and...
Sell.
But his value might never be higher. His value might never be higher.
That's it, Terry. You know a mad money? Sell. That's it right here. Sell Bobby Dalbec the day after the World Series to somebody else.
And then he turns into Jeff Bagwell.
And if he does,
then you'll call for Bloom's firing, and I know it.
If he does, it's a good thing you have Tristan Casas, who projects to be a better player at that.
Maybe position. Who knows?
Yeah, Andrew's the big Dalbec guy, but
AAA.
Yeah,
his first AAA game, he hit a home run
tonight. He did. He hit a home run. Yeah, and Like I said, I don't know. But if Dahlbeck is mashing through the first half of next year, if we keep him, he's probably not getting traded at all. But
no.
At this point, the Red Sox are surprisingly in a position to where if they do want to trade Dahlbeck, we can sit and wait for the other teams to call us and be like, hey, what's it going to take? What's it going to take to get Bobby?
Which we would have had to pay someone to take him 3 months ago. Andrew, thank you for preaching patience. I had it with him twice.
Never give up on best friend Bob. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, well, we'll be talking about him throughout the winter. So let's, we're not going to get into duds this time. So let's just talk about some other things. Xander Bogaerts had a big night, game one. 2-run shot off of Marcus Stroman, which made me feel really good. I tweeted on Twitter, because Stroman's such a punk and he's my least favorite person next to David Price, Bogaerts should have put his bat between his legs and pretended it was a horse and rode it around the base pass. That's what I would have done if Stroman was on the mound. But
if you carry your bat to first, you're out.
Oh, are you?
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that. Oh, I would totally walk into that one if I were a player. But anyway, good. He's firing on all cylinders. It's his second or third, you know, really good series in a row. Seems to be primed for hopefully a big October. Devers 2-for-8. Both those hits were in game two. Going down the list, I guess that was about it. Kike, though, 2-for-8, had a home run in game one, drove in a run tonight. Also gunned down, I forget which base runner it was, at third base. Oh, gunned down two. I missed one.
Didn't he gun down someone last night, two at the plate? Didn't he get someone?
Oh,
I thought someone got greedy last night, and then tonight
I don't know about gunned him down. Yeah. I think it was a bad base running decision. It was a good throw, but gunned him down. I'm saving for anyone in the Red Sox outfield.
Yeah,
let's put it that way. It wasn't a great throw. It was a good throw.
That was the Pete Alonso throw where he was out by a mile, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that okay?
Yeah, DeSarcina shouldn't have even sent him. Which is hilarious.
I mean, talk about a third base coach who doesn't know what he's doing. Another error tonight on the base paths. I thought they were the Red Sox for a little while there. The Mets were terrible on the bases in both games. Trying to take third on Kike, I understand that one because that was a very deep fly ball. But by the time the third base coach signaled for a slide, he was going to be out no matter what. I mean, you got to tell your runner that he has to hustle when these Red Sox are throwing the ball. He ran there lackadaisically. He thought he had it like taken, like the throw was going to second for some reason.
Maybe it's Kevin Kiermaier stole their scouting report card, too.
That was hilarious.
He might have.
The thing, though, a lot of Red Sox fans might have forgotten about Gary DeSarcina, but he was John Farrell's bench coach in the final year that Farrell managed. See,
I knew I didn't like him.
Yeah. And
I couldn't tell why, but I knew I didn't like him.
Here's the other fun fact, though. Farrell gets tossed in the first inning of what ended up being the final playoff game for us against the Astros in 2017. So Gary DeSarcina managed basically that full game. And, you know, and then we went home. Farrell got fired and Cora got hired.
And we changed the name of the podcast.
Gary's got deep ties, though. Nothing but respect. I think he was a UMass Amherst guy. He was definitely the manager at Pawtucket for a good long while there, too. So good to see him holding down, hopefully for a while, in the majors.
Well, that Mets manager and coaching staff could be in line for a shakeup, unfortunately, this season. So we'll see. But like you said, he is a smart baseball guy.
Hire Theo Epstein. Should hire Theo Epstein, and they should do what the Philadelphia 76ers and the NBA had to do. Like bring
Theo should not go there.
Yeah, and he won't. I mean, if he had problems with Larry Lucchino breathing down his neck, it's never going to work with Steve Cohen.
Could you guys imagine if George Steinbrenner had Twitter? Joe Castiglione mentioned that tonight on the WEI broadcast, and I had to stop and laugh for like a solid 5 minutes. trying to think about what the, you know, whether his Twitter would be as good to read and laugh about as some of these others.
Yeah, that would have been really entertaining. He'd be like the Donald J. Trump
of the sports world. It'd be awesome. World.
Yeah, he would. Yeah. All right. So we got a few minutes here. Let's get into pitching a little bit. Rodriguez is going to be your number three starter, whether we like it or not. Didn't look terrible. Didn't look great. 4 1/3 innings pitched, 5 hits, 2 earned runs. Did walk 3, which is kind of high for him. Struck out 5. So
he's tipping his changeup. Eckersley mentioned it on the broadcast tonight that he thinks Eduardo Rodriguez is tipping pitches. And then I went through a little bit of a deep dive into Twitter. There seems to be, and granted, this is fans, right? So we all overreact.
Internet
as fans.
Sleuths.
I'm right on the top, but everyone seems to think he's tipping his changeup. If he's tipping his changeup, it explains a lot on those 3 walks because all 3 of them were on the changeup.
He did have a problem with that earlier in his career, and it was with that pitch.
He's had it multiple times. Yeah, he's had that at least twice or 3 times in his career where he goes through bad stretches, and it's because he's tipping his curve, his changeup, and his fastball is 92, not 98, so he can't always get away with it.
Yeah, his changeup's his bread and butter pitch. But Andrew, any thoughts on Rodriguez?
This is when he has to come through. If he wants to really solidify his spot in that postseason roster, well, not roster, but rotation, this is it. This is absolutely his real last chance. That being said, I don't know who's going to go in front of him, but hopefully they have what they need. He's going Sunday?
I was just about to check that. Yeah,
yeah, he's going Sunday.
He is.
Yeah, I think it goes. Yeah, it goes Nate, then Nick, and then Eddie. So I don't know. We don't have the luxury of Garrett Whitlock right now, so we can probably only afford 1 5 inning game out of one of these pitchers. You know, and I'm assuming that's gonna be the middle one there out of Nick. So we definitely need good Eddie, 2019 Eddie, to show up and just absolutely dominate this team.
See, I don't know necessarily that we can only afford 1 5 inning game. We do have an off day on either side of the series, right, before and after, and then we face Baltimore. So I don't know that we need him to go more than 5, but this could be, you know, the worst case scenario for the Red Sox is we lose the wild card game or don't get in. It's possible still.
Wait, he's got good numbers against New York, though. So
I agree with that. I'm just saying, if that were to happen, this would be the last start he could point to when he hits free agency this offseason to be like, look, this is who I am. The big moment. I went out there and shut him down. You got to pay me $30 million a year. So this is the biggest start for him in his career because this is the start that is going to get him his big paycheck or not.
I can't wait to see
you can't point to Baltimore. You can't point to Baltimore and say, hey, look, I threw 6 innings against Baltimore or Washington right now. So next week, as far as his start, isn't going to matter. This is the highest leverage start he's going to have as far as what his potential earnings could be until the playoffs. And if we make the playoffs, there's no guarantee we'll make it far enough for him to pitch.
I forgot what I was going to say. Because I was a little antsy with it, but
something about his salary.
Oh yeah, right, exactly. I can't wait because we're all over the board as a podcast on what we think's going to happen and how he's going to be valued. But I can't wait to see what it ends up being. But he does have good numbers, so that theoretically should be a pretty good start for him, and it's the ESPN game as well, so we'll see. I just want to bring up one other thing. I mean, Ottavino looked shaky. Barnes did not look good tonight. Only lasted 1/3 of an inning, gave up 1 hit, walked 2, so not good. Brazier came in and
they should shut him down,
cleaned everything up. Yeah, I mean, So we've definitely got some issues in the late innings, but what did you guys think of Cora pulling Richards last night with one out into the ninth inning? I didn't like that for Hernandez.
I think he got what he wanted out of it. I think he saw that Garrett did his job, built on that, and wanted to get Hernandez some higher level or higher leverage situations. Because, like Cora said today, we don't have a closer. We're going to take it game by game. Who knows? Maybe that will springboard Hernandez into an absolute, you know, run here for the next month, which would be just amazing to watch.
Can I give you both a heart attack here briefly?
Go ahead.
The best pitcher to close right now, if I had to pick a wild card game closer, we Garrett have a one Richards. Run lead, is Garrett Richards. Yeah. Like, oh, it's cardiac arrest, but it's necessary.
He's been good. He's been good out of the bullpen. I had a feeling he might be, but Darwin's in closed out the game and didn't give up a run, but he didn't look sharp. So I hope he does get sharp and, like Andrew says, goes on that run, but he's a little heart attacky for me.
I think it was net more to get him work than it was anything else or anything negative about Richards. Darwinson hadn't worked in a couple of days. They need to find out what our guys can do in big spots, like Andrew said. And you saw it tonight. I mean, for the first two bullpen appearances, I'm sitting there going, where the hell's the scrubs? You know, why are the good pitchers going into this game? It's a laugher. I mean, we're up by 10 runs. I think I said in War Room, you know, in our private message on Twitter, that I thought they were going to have a position player pitch for the Mets. And then all of a sudden, you've got Ottavino, Barnes, Taylor, Sally Morley. Like, everyone's getting in the game who's actually a decent reliever. Like, this is, right now, it's a guessing game for Cora as to who's going to be reliable.
Sawamura is not the guy either. I trust him. Well, maybe I might trust Matt Barnes less than him, but it's pretty close. Let's just go ahead and get into the series. I am going to be at the first two games, weather permitting. It's not looking great those first couple of days. Not looking like a complete wash either, so but don't expect perfect weather. Game one is the marquee matchup. That is 7:10 on Friday night. Gerrit Cole versus Nathan Eovaldi. Maybe that's a wild card game preview. I don't know. But that's definitely a big matchup, and Cole got lit up against the lowly Cleveland Indians over the weekend. So perhaps catching him at a good time, and Eovaldi's owned the Yankees all year. So how do you guys see it?
I actually wish that Cole didn't get that beat up. Absolutely happy he got a loss, but I don't know. Angry Gerrit Cole, he's probably going to have a little more to prove. That's going to be a tough one for these hitters. And as we've seen, the Red Sox can put up like 15 one game, then, nothing the next. So I am not super hopeful about this one. I still respect Cole as one of the best pitchers in the game. So if we pull that out, I'll be happy. It's going to depend on Nate. The lefties are starting to hit in their lineup, and that's the one concern I have with them.
I think we lose this game. I'm a little bit upset that this is probably the game that determines whether or not Gerrit Cole or Robbie Ray is the Cy Young, as far as the voters are concerned. Because it's high leverage, it's in the spotlight, it's basically Robbie Ray carrying the Jays, and it's Gerrit Cole carrying the Yankees. Whichever team makes it's going to have a huge edge as far as which one of their guys gets the Cy Young. But like Andrew said, a pissed off Gerrit Cole is a scary thing. And even though Nate plays with fire, I would have rather thrown Nick Pivetta in this game and taken a loss then throw Nate Eovaldi, and we're probably still going to take a loss.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to be the guy that picks a 7-game win streak come to an end. I'm gonna ride the momentum, and New York did kind of rebound pretty well here against the Rangers over the past few days, but I think the Red Sox are feeling it. I think they're firing on all cylinders. We're seeing it with Bogarts. We're seeing it with Schwarber right now. Martinez has, you know, been pretty reliable. Renfro in the clutch. I think we can do it. The thing that makes me the most nervous is what we were just talking about, is the back end of the bullpen. Like, I feel like if we're going to get beat, that could be where it ends up happening. But I'm going to say game one's a win for the Red Sox. Game two.
Terry is the optimist.
I'm the homer tonight. Game two, which unfortunately I'm going to be at for this one. Originally, Saturday was the Evaldi Cole matchup, at least according to the ESPN schedule. But as of this morning, it got shuffled a little bit. But game two, Nestor Cortez, who's been pitching very well lately, and all season really, a 2.79 ERA, against Nick Pivetta, who got absolutely creamed last time he faced New York. I think he lasted 1 2/3 innings. So how do you guys have this one?
I can't even get a read on this one. That sounds like such a crappy out. But
the Red Sox win.
Yeah, okay. I like your optimism. I can't even figure it out. It's Nestor Cortez. It's like, we should hit him. But will we? He's so hard to read. Is he going to do that weird crap? I mean, they don't have an amazing history against him. They're only hitting 250 as a team. They have limited at-bats. I think they only have 16 total at-bats against him. And we've seen what happens with the Red Sox when they face a guy that they really haven't seen before. They make him look like a Cy Young Award winner each time. But I don't know. If I'm going to say loss in game one, I can't see them going two in a row. So going to have to pick a win.
All right, the Red Sox are going to win this game, and here's why. Nestor Cortez in his last three starts has gone 6 innings, 6 1/3, and then 4 1/3 against Texas. And he's struck out 7, walked 2, a couple of walks against Texas. The Red Sox are going to take so many pitches off this guy. They're going to get him out of there in the 5th or 6th inning. And then we get to eat off the Yankees bullpen. And the Yankees bullpen is the worst bullpen in baseball at holding a 1-run lead. So if we can keep it close, which I think we can, because I think we can hit, we're going to win this game. And I don't necessarily think that Nick Pivetta is a loss. I think Nick Pivetta shows up in big moments. I really do. We haven't seen a lot of Nick Pivetta in big moments of late. But, you know, the first time we saw him in a big moment, game against Chicago, he went 7 no-hit innings. He did it again against Seattle. I mean, this kid can pitch when it comes down to it. This might be his playoff, you know, rotation spot on the line. It could be. I might put Garrett Richards in the rotation if he blows this game. I mean, I don't know. But I think he's going to be pitching his tail off.
Unfortunately, I'm just going to – I don't have a lot of confidence in Pivetta right now, so I'm gonna say the Yankees win that one. Final game of the series, Sunday night, Jordan Montgomery versus Eduardo Rodriguez. Montgomery has given the Red Sox fits throughout the year. We have hit him at times, but definitely a guy who can show up, give a gritty performance, and make it a tough game. So how do you guys have that one?
I hate facing Jordan Montgomery. Just absolutely despise him. I feel like we never do well off of him. But I already said, and I can't go back on it, I think E-Rod shows up. So I like this game for the Red Sox.
Eddie's paycheck is on the line, and I think we lose. I think we take 1 out of 3 from the Yankees, unfortunately, in this series. We're still going to have a lead on them in the wild card race because they've blown so many games to terrible opponents. And I think we'll take that maybe 1.5 game lead, whatever it would be, into Baltimore and Washington to close it out.
Montgomery has only given up one earned run in each of his last two starts. They were against Baltimore and Texas. So perhaps we'll finally get to him this time. We've seen him enough, and he usually pitches a solid 6 innings against us. So we'll see. But I'm going to, like Andrew, I'm going to lean on E-Rod's strong history against the Yankees and say that we win that one. Doesn't look like they're getting Jonathan Loaisiga back this weekend. Tuesday against Toronto is his projected return date, so that certainly helps us. Chapman's been struggling a little bit in the bullpen, so at least they won't be at full strength as far as their pen goes. So on that, we will wrap. 24 hours after this episode, deep dives, we're going to be talking about wild card matchups, what a matchup against New York would look like versus what a matchup against Toronto might look like. So join us for that episode. Everybody have a good end of your work week. Take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.